Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host,
Steve Noble. Okay, let's get going. All right, welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Didn't have a chance to get Joel Rosenberg on live because it's 7 hours ahead and he's doing a bunch of interviews with the presidential election and everything. So I had a great 30-minute conversation with Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author from yesterday. So we're just going to jump right into it. This is my conversation with Joel Rosenberg from yesterday. About allisrael.com and allarab.news, which we're going to talk about predominantly today. But one of the things you said in the press release is people are asking you all the time, and I can echo this because it happens to me all the time, but where's a source of news that you can trust, that you can actually get actual information instead of just spin? And when it comes to the Middle East, for those of us evangelicals over here in America, it's very difficult to get any news that's not tainted and isn't spun, mostly to the left. So with these two websites that you're launching, kind of why these and why now, Joel?
Sure, Steve. Well, first of all, it was fun to meet you here in Israel. It's a great way to always start a relationship.
Absolutely.
And when you were here with the lieutenant, and I love North Carolina. We vacation in the Outer Banks every year for the last 20 years, and the whole state is beautiful. So now that I've said nice things about North Carolina, I do love it. I wish I was there, although I love Israel too. Listen, I started these new websites, All Israel News and All Arab News, because for several reasons. First of all, is because I felt like there needed to be a one-stop shopping website that linked to all the really interesting and credible stories in the region, but also provided exclusive interviews, original content, exclusive polling, and context, analysis. What's happening and why does it matter? Why should I care? That type of coverage from an evangelical worldview is just not, it's very hard to find. And there's nothing like the Drudge Report or something that sort of links all these things in one place. Now, I know your next question, Steve, is, well, you're launching two websites. How can you call that one-stop shopping? Okay, well, it's because they're cross-linked. All Arab News, we started because many of the contacts and the sources and relationships I have with Arab Christians, but also with Arab Muslims, they are not willing to let me interview them if the interview is going to appear on All Israel News. It's just a bridge too far for many Arab Christians and Arab Muslims. But yes, they're very happy to do it if I have a website called All Arab News. And already we've had exclusive interviews. We had the leading, probably the leading Islamic Sunni cleric or sheikh in the entire world was our first interview on All Arab News. One of the most fascinating men. 9/11 changed his life as a Saudi, and he decided to go be against the radicals and be supporting moderation, peace, relations with Christians and Jews. And now he's the head of the world's leading Muslim organization. You don't read about him in the mainstream press of the United States, and he's not ready to do an interview on All Israel News. But he did the interview with me on All Arab News, knowing that I'm an Israeli, knowing that I'm Jewish, knowing that I'm an evangelical, that I'm a Zionist, and I live in Jerusalem, in the capital of Israel. And that is just one of those game-changing, you know, things that are going on in this part of the world. And these websites can cover them and help people who do care about the Middle East, but feel like, I care, but I don't really know much about what's going on, and I don't know who to trust.
Yeah, and for those of us back here, and Joel's originally from America, and so he's got dual citizenship, but for those of us back here, listen, when it comes to news about the Arab nations, when it comes to news about Israel, anything out of the Middle East, we almost have no option, except until now, praise the Lord, to get some news that we can trust, and news from a fellow believer, which is even more rare. And then even in the believing world, sometimes people make too much or too little out of things going on in the Middle East. And it's really a big deal, especially right now. I mean, this has been a crazy year. in the Middle East as it is around the world. 2020, the year of anything but clear vision. But whether we're talking about the UAE deal with the Israeli, I mean, that's the first peace deal we've seen in 25 years, the huge explosion in Beirut. And then we've got this massive battle between Trump and Biden and these two parties that like to both chirp about being massive supporters of Israel. But there's so many things on the table here, Joel. Let people understand. I don't know that everybody understands beyond the fact that you've got this incredible story and this incredible career as a number one best-selling New York Times author with all the Epicenter and The Last Jihad and all the other books that people are familiar with. But God's given you incredible favor there in the Middle East with the Saudis. It's really remarkable. I just want you to kind of let people know about that. And obviously, we're not banging anybody's gong except the Lord's, but he has definitely put you in a unique position to do something like this.
Well, that's true. I mean, 20 years ago, I worked for then former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And so that began to draw me into the sort of the political epicenter of Israel as I began to build relationships all throughout the Israeli society. And now I actually live here as a dual citizen, as you said. One of my sons, we have four, one of them has finished his service in the Israeli army and now is back in Bible college in the United States. And one of my sons is in a special forces unit here in Israel. And yet, God has also opened other doors. And that is, I have led six evangelical delegations to meet with the most senior Arab leaders in the entire region. I've now had five meetings with Egyptian President el-Sisi, five meetings with Jordan's King Abdullah II, two private meetings with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, arguably the most controversial leader in the world right now, and one meeting with the Crown Prince of the country that just made peace with Israel, United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
His name is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed. I've also met with the leadership of Bahrain and Azerbaijan, and the King of Bahrain has invited me to bring a delegation there, but COVID has delayed it. The president of Azerbaijan has asked me to come and bring a delegation, but COVID has delayed it. What I'm saying is this has nothing to do with me. God is opening some doors for me, and not as an Israeli or as a writer or an author, but as an evangelical. They invite me because they want to build relationships between Muslims and evangelical Christians.
Pretty amazing interview with Joel Rosenberg from yesterday. This is Steve Noble. I am live in the studio. Two more segments with Joel and then Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest in the last segment of the show. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Just replaying the conversation I had yesterday with Joel Rosenberg, of course, New York Times bestselling author. But he's also, God's given him all kinds of favor there in the Middle East. And he's taking all these several groups of evangelical leaders to meet with the Muslim leaders of these countries over there, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, the King and Saudi. It's just amazing all the favor God's given them. And that's what we were talking about when we hit the break. So this is continuing my conversation, which I just recorded yesterday with Joel Rosenberg. He was calling in from Jerusalem. That's where he lives now. He's got dual citizenship. But we were talking about all these meetings he's had with these Arab leaders. We'll pick it up there.
And most of them have never done it before. They tell me that directly, and I bring key leaders with me, so it's not just me. And these are the most fascinating conversations. For just one example, we ask these men, we say, look, in the Bible, we are commanded to pray for kings and all those in authority. King so-and-so, or president so-and-so, or crown prince so-and-so. What are your prayer requests? How can we pray for you? And they share with us the things that are on their hearts. One of them shared about the illness of his daughter, and we've been praying for her. Mm. We end the meetings with prayer in the name of Jesus for these leaders, for their families, for their nations. Look, I'm not saying that these trips have been game changers in terms of making peace in the region, but we have had a front row seat on some of the extraordinary dynamics that are going on. And let me just note, many Christians, millions of Christians around the world, around the United States, have been praying for the peace of Jerusalem for decades and decades. And we always say, well, Lord, when are you going to answer that prayer? And now we have this huge peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Most American media outlets are not giving it the coverage that it deserves.
No,
this is
not
the
at
biggest
all.
Thing that's happened in 25 years.
I know, barely
and almost
a peep.
No Americans are paying attention.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. We're talking to Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, novels, nonfiction books. And then we're talking about these two brand new websites, allisrael.com and allarab.news. I'm looking at allarab.news right now. And speaking of the UAE deal, which I want to ask you about, this is right on the front page of the website, allarab.news. In a stunning statement rarely uttered by Arab leaders, senior UAE officials tell All Arab News, quote, Jews and Christians belong here, unquote, in the Mideast, adding that, quote, their roots are in this region, unquote. I mean, it's remarkable, Joel. I don't know how much people understand how shocking it is to see a statement like that out of the senior leadership of the United Arab Emirates and not talking about it much. It was kind of a blip on the radar screen here in America and then got swallowed up by the news cycle. But how big of a deal is this historic peace agreement? Because it was shocking to see it come together.
Well, you know, most people, when they think about news from the Middle East, it's bad news. It's terrorism, it's genocide, it's religious persecution, it's Christians having their heads chopped off, it's, you know, it's war, it's rumors of war. That has been the news from the Middle East for 2,000 years, and certainly for the last 100 years. So, and look, I was born in 1967. 2 months after I was born, Israel faced with the most dangerous war of its lifetime. Like, and we've had wars from in 48, 56, 67, 73, 79, 82, 91. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah.
So suddenly there's good news coming out of the Middle East. I'm not saying everything's perfect, but there's some fascinating dynamics that are going on. Yes, Iran is becoming more dangerous than ever, but because Iran's becoming dangerous, and honestly, because President Obama and then Vice President Biden made an insane nuclear deal with Iran, giving the terrorists that run Iran $150 billion. There was one silver lining to that crazy deal. It forced Arab leaders to ask a fundamental question.
Yeah.
Who is my friend and who is my foe? And they'd always seen Israel as their foe, their enemy, but they were like, listen, maybe that's not true anymore. Maybe we should form an alliance with Israel against Iran. The Arab states are terrified of a nuclear Iran, a terrorist-led Iran, and they want to build an alliance to protect themselves. And they're realizing, look, Israel has high technology. We have money. Let's go invest in Israeli technology and do business together. Let's have our countries have tourists to go back and forth to our countries. It's totally changed thinking is going on in this last couple of years that hasn't gone on in 2,000 years.
So is this generally a realignment in the region, Joel, from, hey, it looks like Israel, big bad Israel, actually, they're so small, but bad, definitely. Little Israel is our enemy, and then all of a sudden, with the unleashing of, you know, cash delivered on crates from planes with Obama and Biden, the next thing you know, you see people around the region going, okay, maybe Israel isn't the problem. Maybe the real problem is Iran, and now you have this massive realignment. And I don't think the United Arab Emirates are the only one having this conversation or having this realignment. Can we expect other things going on there, Joel? And how much does President Trump have to do with any of this?
Wow, a lot of great questions. Let me give you, quick fire answers, and you can pull on whatever thread you want. Number one, it's absolutely a massive fundamental realignment going on, and it didn't start with wanting to get close to Israel. It started with the Arab states being terrified that Washington was flipping from its traditional alliances with Sunni Arab countries to Iran. And they couldn't believe it. And Obama and Biden began those negotiations with Iran in secret, not even telling Israel or the Arab countries. So that created a sense of betrayal. I've had more than one, actually many, Arab leaders tell me to my face, Joel, we felt betrayed.
Man.
And we felt scared that America was not going to be there for us if we had to defend ourselves from Iran. So who could we ally with? Israel. So this is what you're watching. That's number one. Number two, yes, I believe it's, you know, it's not just the UAE. There are multiple countries that are considering not if to make peace with Israel, but when. Among those would be Bahrain, Oman, Saudi Arabia, Morocco, and a number of others. So this is fascinating. President Trump has flipped the script on the Middle East. For 25 years, American presidents of both parties have been trying to make peace here, and every time they try the exact same approach, which is that the Palestinians have to make peace with Israel first, and then everybody else can make peace. Trump flipped the script. He said, listen, I would love to see the Palestinians make peace with Israel, and I'm going to lay out a plan that I think would be a great deal, but I know that the Palestinian leadership is not going to make peace with Israel, so I'm going to spend most of my time encouraging other Arab countries, why don't you go first? You guys want peace with Israel. Don't wait for the Palestinian leadership. They'll come around someday, maybe. In the meantime, do what you need to do to make peace for your national interests. And the Crown Prince of the UAE, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, we call him MBZ here in the region, he showed the courage to go first. And Trump has, look, he wrote a book called Art of the Deal. Everyone has mocked him, saying, you don't know how to make a deal in the Middle East or with China or with Mexico and Canada or, you know, and he's doing it.
Pretty amazing developments. That's my interview yesterday with Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, and God's given him great favor there in the Middle East. More about President Trump, the 2020 election, what it means not only to the Middle East, but to the rest of the world. Some great insight from Joel Rosenberg, my conversation with him yesterday. We'll finish that up when we come back. And then in the final segment, we'll have a live conversation. Dan Forrest, Lieutenant Governor, running for governor. So if you're happy in your stuff, welcome back. It's Steve Noble. I am playing the interview that I did yesterday with Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author. All kinds of things in the Middle East. These two new websites he just started so you could actually get some good, accurate news and reporting out of the Middle East, allisrael.com and allarab.news. And we're talking about Trump in this particular segment and the 2020 election. And he's going to say some amazing insight about Joe Biden and the election coming up here in less than 60 days. So let's jump back to the interview from yesterday with Joel Rosenberg.
It's like watching sausage get made. It's messy. I don't like it. Yeah. But I like the taste of the sausage coming out. This is the first peace deal in the Middle East in 25 years. The president is creating millions of new jobs. He's got police unions all across America who usually are 100% for the Democrats are shifting over to voting for him, endorsing him. Why? Because they believe him that he may be messy, he may be mean sometimes, be strong, and he knows how to get things done that are in America's behalf. So I'm seeing those comments in my private capacity as an individual American citizen, not running All Israel News and All Arab News, because those are nonprofit organizations that are nonpartisan. But I will tell you that when I met with President Trump in the Oval Office last year, I, who had been a never Trumper, told him that I'd been a never Trumper, but that he'd converted me because he's keeping his word. He's the most pro-life and pro-Israel president we have ever seen in American history. And he's the biggest job creator we've ever seen. And, you know, Biden is nice, but he's weak and he's wrong on every issue that I can think of. So, you know, Trump is not the nicest, warmest, kindest guy, at least on Twitter.
Yeah.
In person, he's lovely. But on Twitter, he can be a disaster at times. But he's hiring evangelicals. He's making these amazing deals. He's leading well. It's messy.
Yeah.
But the results are very impressive. So that's, I think, where we are right now.
We're talking to New York Times bestselling author Joel Rosenberg, specifically about his two brand new websites, allisrael.com and allarab.news. And I'll try to remember to give you credit for the sausage example, because that's exactly what it's like. I've got a friend here in town. If you're ever in the Raleigh area, Joel, and like barbecue, I'll take you to some of the best Texas barbecue I've ever had in my life. But they make their own sausage there in the store. And it was rather disturbing to watch it come together, but it sure was lovely to eat it. And I'm like, wow, I don't want to watch this process anymore, but I'll order it just about every time I'm in there. That's a great example of Donald Trump. You may not like the process and the way it looks, but the end product, I mean, I wasn't a never Trumper, but I was back then in 2016, Joel, I was like, listen, I'm going to vote for the devil I don't know very well over the devil that I know quite well, which was Hillary Clinton, of course. But since that time, he's proven himself over and over again.
I will tell you that I did vote for Trump at the end. 4 days before the election, I finally said, listen, I can't vote for Hillary. I will vote for Trump. But I was really voting for Mike Pence.
Yeah.
And Trump just happened to be on the ticket. Pence is a personal friend of mine. Pence is also a reader of my novels. And my wife was joking with me, really? You're going to vote against a ticket that actually has someone on the ticket that has read your novels and likes them? That's your plan? And he very reluctantly voted for Trump. But like I said, when I met with him, I said, listen, you know, I still have some disagreements with you, but I gave him a list of about 10 things, promises he made that I totally didn't believe he would keep, that he has kept.
Yeah.
And these are big promises. I mean, they're huge. And I, being pro-life, just as an evangelical, you just have to say, Biden is seems like a nice man. He's a nice grandfather. He's a nice father. He's a nice husband. I believe all that. But he believes in killing babies in the womb, and
that's
he doesn't care. He doesn't want any restrictions on it. And then he appointed he selected a San Francisco radical leftist to be his running mate. That doesn't give me any more comfort.
No, not at all.
So just on that issue alone, I don't even see the choice.
How big of a deal is this to the people you're talking to there in the Middle East, Joel? How big of a deal is this election to them with Trump versus Biden? Are they nervous about it? Are they confident that Trump's going to win? What kind of reverberations is this having? Because I would imagine this is on everybody's radar screen over there.
The number one question I get when I meet with Israeli or Arab people or leaders is, what's going to happen in the elections? What do you think? Because they're nervous, because they like Trump, because they see how much security he has brought to the region and how clear thinking that he is giving towards Iran as the enemy and Israel and the Arab countries are the good guys. Not perfect, but good, and on America's side. It's not hard to see. Trump sees it. Biden does it. One interesting quote about Joe Biden, look, we both went to the same university, Syracuse University. Of course, he cheated, and I didn't when I was there. But I will say, again, in my own private capacity, not my own personal views, but there's an interesting quote by the man that served as the defense secretary for the Obama-Biden ticket, administration. That was Robert Gates. And Robert Gates, the defense secretary for Biden, said that Joe Biden has been wrong on every foreign policy issue for the last 40 years.
Wow.
That's his own guy saying it. And it's true. When President Obama made the decision to go send U.S. Special Forces into Pakistan to kill Osama bin Laden, that was a great move by the president. And it's one of the few things I've been able to say nice about President Obama. But who was against that decision? Joe Biden.
Wow.
Even Hillary Clinton supported going to kill bin Laden. Biden didn't. Like, are you serious? Like, what are we talking about here? And so I'm just saying that people in this region, they see that Biden supported the insane Iran nuclear deal and giving $150 billion to the terrorist mullahs who run Iran. That's insane. Biden was for it. When the United States under Obama pulled all American forces out of Iraq, when everybody said, don't do that, or ISIS is going to seize the vacuum and then kill a lot of people, Biden supported President Obama pulling all those troops out. And what happened? There was a genocide by ISIS that took over, that created a caliphate the size of Massachusetts, and then systematically were killing Christians until what? Until President Obama came to power and worked with
President
our Arab
Trump.
Allies to stop ISIS. Like, this is not rocket science.
That's right.
One guy gets it, one guy doesn't.
how should we as American evangelicals, and we'll let you go, Joel, how should we as evangelicals here in America, when we go to these two brand new websites that Joel has created with some folks there in the region, allisrael.com as well as allarab.news, how should we use that as evangelicals, as people, you know, excited about the return of Christ, not knowing when, but obviously it looks like, if anything, 2020 has been a great dry run for the man of lawlessness and what that could look like. But how should we kind of interact with the news coming out of the Middle East? Give us some encouragement and give us some help there, Joel, and then we'll finish up.
Sure, happy to. And again, let me say that these two websites are actually nonpartisan. So we will cover fairly both sides. You clearly hear that I have personal views. I'm a Democrat when I was growing up, and then I switched to become a conservative Republican. But I'm also a journalist, and I can treat them fairly. And we've got a good team helping me. But we're going to cover what's going on in this region and help Christians understand story by story, why are these things important? And I think it's not just reporting the news that's accurate, that's trustworthy, but explaining why is it important and doing it with a biblical worldview. It doesn't mean every story is going to be about Christians or have Bible verses in it or prayer requests. Some will. And we'll cover stories that are uniquely interesting to evangelicals, like archaeological discoveries and interviews with Christians in the region and so forth. But it's also context. Where is this world heading? Because Israel is the centerpiece of God's plan and purpose for the nations. That's what the Bible tells us. And Jesus is coming back, we know, in the Bible. Where is he coming back? Not to Washington, not to Los Angeles, not to Hollywood. Not even to the heartland. He's coming to Jerusalem. And so all the prophecies in the Bible lead us from where we are right this minute to the return of Christ and him reigning from this city, Jerusalem, where I live today. So keeping an eye on the rebirth of the state of Israel, Jews returning to the Holy Land after centuries of exile, rebuilding the ancient ruins, making peace in the region, Jewish people coming to faith in Jesus, Muslim people coming to faith in Jesus. These are all big stories that would have seemed impossible 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It would have seemed impossible 500 years ago, 700 years ago, 1,000 years ago, but it's happening all right now. And there are very few places you can go and learn about it in one place. That's what allisrael.com and allarab.news, that's what we're trying to do.
Really is amazing. I don't know what happened there to the. Really is amazing everything going on in the Middle East. Appreciate that time with Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author. When we come back, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest running for governor. We're going to be doing this every Wednesday until the election with Dan Forrest. The last segment every Wednesday with my good friend Dan Forrest. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you back live. That was my interview yesterday with Joel Rosenberg. He was calling in from Jerusalem. He's a dual citizenship now. And then actually I met Joel last year on a trip to Israel that my other good friend Dan Forrest, who happens to be the North Carolina Lieutenant Governor, running for governor, and by God's grace will be the governor, the next governor of the great state of North Carolina. We were all on that trip together, so we've gone from Joel Rosenberg to Dan Forrest. I'm doing pretty good today, Dan. How are you, buddy?
I am doing well. Steve, how was Joel doing? Sorry I missed your previous segment.
Yeah, that's right. He was doing great. You know, when he first went back over there earlier this year, they stuck him in his bedroom, literally his bedroom in his apartment for 14 days because they were playing hardball with the COVID situation. So that's when I did a live show with him back in February and then had a chance to talk to him yesterday. We just aired that interview. But it was cool to be on that trip. And, of course, you and I were on that trip and Israel factors in. We'll talk about that another time, how that factors into how God moved you into public service. But thanks for calling in today. Super excited for what's going on, praying and working towards the election of you for the next North Carolina governor here in our great state. And we're going to do this, by the way, everybody, I mentioned this before, we're trying to do this every Wednesday between now and Election Day. This is super, super important. As important as the federal election is, do not forget about state and local elections. A lot of politics still is local here in North Carolina, obviously. under Governor Cooper. I just put some pictures up earlier today, Dan, on Facebook of all these businesses in downtown Raleigh, and this is true in other parts of the state, that are all boarded up. It looks like kind of a third world country in graffiti. We ate down there for dinner on Saturday night. It was sad, but it was also enraging. So what have you thought of the way Governor Cooper has handled the COVID response here in North Carolina? Because there's about 47 other states that are more open than we are right now.
Well, I think those are, even though those two things kind of go together, they're somewhat separate too, right? I mean, we know that those riots came along after the George Floyd issue, and, you know, that led to one thing after another. Then that kind of got conflated with peaceful protests, and riots, you know, became, synonymous with peaceful protests. And then they, all this misinformation going on out there about how, peaceful protests weren't bad for COVID, but people going to church is bad for COVID, all these kind of things. It's just part of the nonsensical story that goes on with the media and with this governor. But I think as it relates to downtown Raleigh and downtown Charlotte and Fayetteville and other cities across our state and around the country, the question, Steve, is how come the media is not telling the story? How come they're not showing pictures of the destruction of these towns? That's the real question, because if there was a Republican governor in North Carolina, I'm pretty positive that it would be a headline on the nightly news every night. But the media has hid this from the public. So when I go out and talk to people, and I'm meeting in big audiences regularly, when I'm out there, I ask them the question, how many of you know that downtown Raleigh and Charlotte, et cetera, were destroyed during these riots, and they're still boarded up, and they look like Beirut? Nobody knows this.
Jeez.
It's a mystery to them. Why is that? So, the reason I even couch all this with COVID is there's a much broader agenda going on with the Democrats right now. Part of this lockdown, part of the strategy related to all this is a much larger strategy for the election that's coming up in November that nobody wants to seem to talk about in the media.
Yeah, it really is shocking. And to think that it's just about COVID is really small-minded. There's a whole lot more going on here. And, you know, kind of an existential threat. And Charlie Kirk at the Republican National Convention, I mean, referencing Donald Trump, said, Donald Trump is the bodyguard of Western civilization. And on one hand, I'm like, is that hyperbole? But on the other hand, I'm thinking, yeah, that really is. And on a state level, we have the same situation. It's just as dire here as it is on the federal level.
Well, to make the comparison with what Charlie Kirk was saying, Winston Churchill was that during World War II. I mean, nobody really liked Winston Churchill. He was kind of washed up at the time, and they went through every politician they could try to find to save Western civilization, and they said, well, who's the tough guy that's actually willing to do it? And it was Churchill. And I think that's what we have in Trump right now. We have a man that's willing to stand up and fight against the media, fight against all the leftist antics, and fight against the Marxist anarchy that's going on across our country right now. Who else is willing to do that? It was Donald Trump. So he stepped in to play that role for us. And, you know, here we have a governor in North Carolina that's not willing to stand up for law and order. We saw the destruction go on, and he said, hey, let's not lose sight. Let's not pay so much attention to the windows being smashed and these businesses being looted and lose sight of what they're protesting for. He's conflating peaceful protest over George Floyd to anarchists running around smashing building windows and looting businesses and burning them. Those things should not ever be conflated. You can have peaceful protests and uphold the law at the same time and protect individuals and protect their businesses. We should do that. We should expect a governor to do that, but our governor has done nothing like that.
Isn't this a bit of a constitutional emergency here in North Carolina? I mean, at the federal level, not so much, but certainly at the state level and certainly here in North Carolina, where you've got a governor that took advantage of kind of an emergency mandate that's normally about 30 days when you look at the history of it. And then the other leadership involved, you and the other people in the Council of State. And then he's literally taken over the state for 6 months. I've been pulling what left of my hair I have, Dan, to going, how in the world did this happen here in North Carolina where a governor has this kind of power? So speak to that. And then I want to ask you, if you had been the governor, what you would have done?
Well, I think that generally the reason why you see this and you see it across the country is people are scared of the shadows right now. Nobody wants to make a wrong decision. I know we're talking about here a pandemic and coronavirus and all this kind of, we can talk about all the facts and figures related to that. But Kristi Noem in South Dakota, obviously is a small state, but Kristi looked at the Constitution, got governor there. She looked at the Constitution and said, I have no constitutional authority to shut this state down or shut businesses down. I have no constitutional authority to shut churches down or to quarantine people, so I'm not going to do it. she looked at her constitution first and said rule of law matters more in a pandemic or an emergency than any other time. Our governor did just the opposite. He said, you know, I'm going to look at this situation politically and see how I can take advantage of it. And that's what he's been doing. And he's been overreaching his executive power again and again. But it's been followed up with a nonsensical subjective criteria for a shutdown. And I think that's what's infuriated people in our state is all these decisions he's making are not based on science, they're based on politics. And people are starting to see that now.
Yeah, and it's really been disgusting to watch the governor of North Carolina, Governor Cooper, I often call him Conrad Cooper, choosing winners and losers. Of course, one of the winners, he didn't dare to shut down abortion clinics, but you shut down churches and everything else. And all these different businesses. I mean, one of our favorite businesses here in Raleigh that Gina and I love to go have dinner at, got shut down the other day because they can't survive. He's literally putting people out of business. And the government has no place picking winners and losers in that game. And it's just infuriating. So, Dan, let's play a little game here. And if we had Governor Dan Forrest in January of 2020, what would your approach have been to the whole COVID situation and the shutdowns and trying to help our neighbor at the same time not destroying ourselves in the process?
Well, I'll be fair to all governors across the country, including our own, that when this thing started, nobody really knew what was going on or what to expect. But once we were in it for a month, I think we had the full picture. And I think, you know, looking back in it again, hindsight's 2020, but looking back, I would say that the way to handle this is with very open and transparent data across the board. I have a list, actually, that I keep on my phone of about 30 data points that I would run through and say, these are the most important things that we need to track. For instance, when we started off, people were saying, hey, just shut down for 2 weeks. We got to flatten the curve so we don't overrun our hospitals and our ICUs and our ventilators. Fine. And everybody said, yeah, we'll do that. And everybody took that hit. Well, 2 weeks turned into 2 months, turned into 6 months, turned into 7 months, and it's still going on. And then these new orders get placed on top of it. Everybody has to wear a mask, and you have to social distance. And now you have to wear a mask outside, and kids can't go back to school, and universities send their kids to school, and then they send them home. All this kind of stuff is not based on science. There's no science supporting this. So I'd say that follow the science and data. Make it publicly available to everybody so everybody can see exactly where we stand on all these key indicators and then report on those key indicators on a daily basis.
And one of the ads that you're playing right now, which I really appreciate, that I don't think enough of us are talking about it, is the effect on our children of not being back in school. So speak to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's, you know, if you're going to talk about coronavirus, and you're going to talk about the symptoms of the virus, the symptoms of a shutdown go along with that. If you're quarantining healthy people, then all of a sudden those healthy people aren't so healthy anymore. You have a bunch of kids that are locked in their homes. They're probably becoming addicted to technology now because their parents probably don't know what to do with them, and they're sitting them in front of screens all day long. So technology or screen addiction is real. Then you have domestic abuse. You have addiction, whether it's pornography addiction or substance abuse addiction of alcohol or drugs. All these things are very real. Suicide. One in four young people in our country have seriously contemplated suicide during this time. One in four, 25%. That is an epidemic going on in our country right now. So you think about all the health implications on the backside of this that are caused by a lockdown, people not going to gyms, not working out, not getting out of their homes, being shut in, the depression and anxiety and fear. All these things are very real consequences of locking people down. Human beings are not meant to be locked down.
Yeah, and that's where, like, Trump nailed that early on, saying we cannot allow the answer to be worse than the problem. And that's exactly what we've had. Yeah. I've said this for a couple months, that we brought an atom bomb to a knife fight. And then with our kids, we had problems with anxiety and nervousness and all that kind of stuff before. It's getting a lot worse now. Yeah. And Cooper never talks about that. There's almost no discussion about the impact on kids.
Yeah, the question that your listeners should always ask are, what are all the things that the politicians aren't talking about?
Yeah.
And those are the things that we should start talking about, you know, because this is a very real problem in our country. We're going to see the effects and results of this for a long time. What happens in this great social experiment where you lock healthy people in their homes for 7 months and you close thousands and thousands of businesses that aren't going to reopen and destroy people's livelihoods?
And when you win and become the next governor of the great state of North Carolina, you can move pretty fast on these things, can't you?
Yeah, I think probably one day.
Yeah, that's so encouraging. If you needed any other reason, there you go. That's just an incredible fact. My kids and Gina ask that all the time. Hey, when Dan wins, how fast can he start to turn this around in one day? So that's really good news. Dan, I look forward to doing this every Wednesday, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. God bless you. We'll keep supporting. All right, pal. We'll talk to you again. You're welcome. We'll talk real soon. Bye-bye. That was Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Hopefully, God willing, the next governor of the great state of North Carolina. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.